So welcome everybody to Uncovering Midrash Parshat Vayetze. So today we are going to be discussing what it means to leave from your location in terms of marriage. So we're going to be hopefully you're going to be doing hopefully one or two midrashim. So I've shared. So please click on the link in the chat to download the Makorot sheet. Right, to the short degree down the source sheet, and then we'll start to.
In the hospital there.
Okay, so Grandma Vader, are you able to download it? If not, if you can't download it, I'll share a screen. Just let me know.
I wasn't planning to be honest. Okay, so share a screen.
Okay, I'll
If you
share a screen.
can.
Okay,
Okay.
I'll share a screen.
I'm on my phone, you know that.
Right, yeah, realizing. Okay, so you'll be sharing screen. Whichever way is easier for people, if you want to use the shared screen, it'll be hopefully big enough for you to read. And if not, also if you notice a little too small, if you rotate your screen sideways and zoom in, that also helps, I find.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. So I'm going to be sharing screen. Don't worry, I can see everybody's faces. I've got everybody nice and large on the side over here. So if you, wave your hands, or react in any other way, I'll see you. Please feel free to chime in at any point. Waving. Okay, that's great. Okay, so here we go. Okay, so before we get started, I want to ask a question so we can help decide who's going to be involved in the reading of the Midrash. So who thinks that setting people up and getting married and that whole process is super easy? Anybody thinks it's a breeze?
No.
Not me.
No?
No.
Okay.
After it's great. After it's afterwards, it's
Okay.
fantastic. But after you get married, it's fantastic. But getting ready beforehand is a little stressful.
Right. So how about this?
The first 6 years were pretty good.
Anybody ever tried setting somebody up? Let's try it that way. Anybody ever tried setting somebody up before?
Yes.
Okay. So, Grandma, since you've tried setting someone up, you are going to take the role of the Roman matron. Okay. So then, who here was really thinks is really hard? I think Leon thought it was really hard. So we'll let him be the. He'll get to read the part of Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta.
I give up.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So the plan is we're going to read through the Midrash. Okay. We'll see the dialogue back and forth, and we'll see whether or not we like the arguments or don't like the arguments. And then we'll see how long that takes, and we'll go from there. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so who's reading? Rabbi Yehuda Bar Simon began. God returns the solitary ones homeward. Okay,
Okay.
now a Roman, now a Roman woman asked Rabbi Yossi ben Halafta, in how many ways did God create the world?
So he said, in six, as it is said, since 6 days God made.
And since then, she asked, what has God been doing?
So God sits on the heavenly throne and makes matches. The daughter of this one to that one, the wife or widow of this one to that one, the money of this one to that one, responded Rabbi Yossi.
And for merely this, you believe in him? She said, even I can do that. I have many slaves, both male and female. In no time at all, I can match them for marriage.
Rabbi Yossi, though this may be an easy thing for you to do, for God it is as difficult as splitting the sea of reeds. Whereupon Rabbi Yossi took his leave.
Okay, let me scroll down. One second.
Okay, now who's good?
Okay. Here we
Okay.
go.
She said to them, what happened to you?
Wait, we missed a little bit. What did you do? I'll
What
read
did
this
she
part.
do?
Yeah.
Okay, you read it.
The matron lined up 1,000 male and 1,000 female slaves and said, "You marry you," and married them all off that night. The next day, one slave had his head bashed in, another lost an eye, and a third hobbled because of a broken leg.
She said to them, "What happened to you?"
And they said to her, "I don't want this one with whom you mashed me."
Immediately she sent for and summoned Rabbi Yossi, and she said, "There is no God like your God, and your Torah is true, pleasing and praiseworthy. You spoke wisely."
He said to her, "Didn't I tell you, if it appears easy in your eyes, it is difficult for the Holy One, blessed be he, like splitting the sea. What do you think? That the Holy One, blessed be he, is marrying them against their will, but not for their benefit? This is why it states, God returns the solitary ones homeward and brings out the chained ones with their bindings. What is binding? Kosherut, crying, Bechi, and sing, Shirut. The one who wants their spouse sings. The one who doesn't want their spouse cries."
Okay.
Great stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so before we get to the next part, so let's just step back and summarize. So what happened? So we had, right, this Roman matron who was doubting, you know, right, who seemingly had a very basic question. And then Rabbi Yossi responded by saying, like, basically, you know, what does God do all day? You know, he spent a lot of effort creating the world, but what's he been doing ever since? And the response is he spends all day trying to arrange marriages and make sure that everybody's marriages are working out okay and that the rig is getting their money. So she's like, that sounds like not a good reason to actually, you know, have a God. Like, that seems like, you know, completely insufficient. So instead, some people just logged on. So let me post I'm gonna repost the record in the chat. It's also being shared on the screen. This way you'll be able to have an easier time if you'd like to save it for later, or if some people find it easier to have it bigger, so that we'll be able to have that as well. Okay. So just to summarize the story, right? So we had the matron asks, what's God been doing with all this time? Rabbi Yossi says he's been spending all this time making matches. Then the matron scoffs, says it's not that hard. She gives it a go. And then, of course, by marrying off 1,000 of her slaves to each other, and then they all get into terrible fights and they're all missing limbs, badly injured the next morning. So clearly, marriage is a little more complicated than just saying you marry you. So as I'm sure many of us understand, it's not just boy and girl, we're done. It's a little more complicated. So okay. So the question then is, so what happens at the end? Right? So we have, let's unpack, so that part makes sense. So that, but let's try and unpack the last part about how difficult it is for God is like splitting of the sea, as well as the pasuk that's quoted here. Okay, so why would we compare it to Kriyat Yamsuf? Any suggestions? Difficulty level. Why like Kriyat Yamsuf?
It was very difficult.
Right. It's very difficult. And it's also, what? Why else? Not only difficult, but it's one of the most famous ones, right? Splitting the sea, like everybody knows that. You know, you don't have to be Jewish at all, right? You don't have to be Christian. And like, you heard of splitting of the sea.
Right.
Right? It's just that famous. And then that one, because everything's out. It's a big, really big one. And she's saying, no, like, getting a marriage right, that's even harder. So this sounds like a very good, good slogan for any marriage counselor to have. You know, that's how difficult it is both to get married and to stay married. It's like splitting the sea.
Right.
Okay. Any other suggestions? Why Kriyat Yamsuf?
I don't know. Kriyat Yamsuf is splitting somebody, splitting people apart, and we're talking about putting people together.
Right, because nature tends to, right, the natural state of things for water is water wants to be with water, right? So seemingly, maybe it's commenting on the natural state of things is that, you know, men would be with men and women with women. Like, you know, the whole men are from Mars, women are from Venus, you know, line, right? It's like, maybe that, but it's not like that, right? So as in, like, it's just as hard to divide water that should go together as it is to try and put men and women who often have their differences. So maybe that's what it's going for.
Okay.
It's okay. I didn't have that many good answers. So, so Grandma, I think you got most of my answers beforehand. So excellent.
Okay.
Okay. So now for this other pasuk that's from Tehillim. So let's look at the whole pasuk inside, and then we'll come back and see how it connects to this. Okay. So I'm going to scroll. So if you have the Makorot sheet, so you have to scroll down it a bit. Wait, is the reference? Wait a minute. I think I had the wrong. 1 second. 75:8. The Hebrew says. I believe. Okay, I guess this is not. This doesn't seem to be the right pasuk. This could be a problem. Okay, so the reference that's listed in the midrash here 58:7 that of Elokim Moshiv Yechidim. So my fault for trusting the source. That was not the correct reference. So excuse me. So now I'm going to do a quick Google of it and see which pasuk this actually is. It is Samachet Zion. Okay. So one moment while I reload. Oh, this doesn't have the English. 1 second. Let me get it with English. One moment. So, sorry about that. This is what you get for relying on your sources. Sometimes it's not as reliable as one would hope. Then 68:7. Not to worry, we still have it. Here we go. Okay, everybody can see my screen, I hope. Make it a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. So as for why this is an excellent positive quote in this context, now we can fully see it in all this glory. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So here we have. So Elokim Moshiv Yechidim Baita, right? So God made, so this might sound familiar for people. So God makes the solitary dwell in a house. Okay, so this sounds a little bit like with a lot of your experiencing now with COVID, right? So everybody's, you know, alone in the house. And it says, Motzi Asirim Kosher wrote, he brings out those who are chained, right? So then here it says into prosperity, Asirim Shachnu Tzchicha, but the rebellious dwell but in a parched land. Okay?
Okay.
So this seems to say that God plants people where they're supposed to be. Yes? No? Right? So here we see it seems to be, does this verse seem like it was quoted so the simple understanding of this verse was that quoted in our context?
Okay.
What do we think? Here, this pasuk is talking about God having those who are solitary live alone. He brings prisoners into prosperity, and the rebellious dwell but in a parched land. So, does this seem to be the way the simple translation of this work with our midrash about being happy in your marriage or sad in your marriage? Is there anything here mentioning about marriage, per se?
No.
Not necessarily, but would you say there's some themes that might be a little bit similar?
Okay.
So the part that might be the things that remind us of, let's say, marriage, at least in my mind, what do we think? What words here remind us of a marriage?
Makes us all feel well in a house. Maybe
right.
People who are alone will come together in a house.
Right, alone and then together in a house, right? But hopefully right. Not the other part. You know, hopefully there's nothing to do with, you know, being prisoners. Hopefully nothing to be with anybody being rebellious in the house. But hopefully not those things, right? So Arim, right, that word would actually seem to indicate the exact opposite of, let's say, the case of a ben sorer umoreh. That's the rebellious child who you are required to and actually end up putting to death because of all, what they have done at that point in their lives. Generally, this is a 13-year-old boy who has both stolen from his parents, then used that money to buy meat and wine, and he is notorious in the town for doing bad deeds. So, again, that child never existed, or not, no matter how bad your teenagers were, are, or will be, that is not something you have to fear, that they'll actually be a ben sorer or more. They might give you a lot of tzaras, they might, you know, might be a pain in the neck, but don't worry, they're not that bad. So, all right, so this pasuk doesn't quite seem to be with what it's quoted for. So let's go back again and look at how we quoted it. Okay, so here we go. So again, so the way we quoted it was, all right, so if the translation is inaccurate of the Midrash, I did the translation. It's a current on Safaria too, so if you think I should change it, let me know and I'll change it on Safaria also. So, here, so what's the right? So the pasuk here, right? So the pasuk says the solitary ones homeward and brings the chains with their bindings, right? So again, so what we do is we split the word kosharot, which I translated as bindings, and right, and it was translated by JPS 1917 as prosperity. Okay.
Right.
So there, what they do is they split the word. This happens a lot in Midrashim, where you split a word not according to the way it sounds, but according to, let's say, composite words that could make up the larger word. So do we think that the word kosharot means Bechi and Shirot? No, the word kosharot means what the word kosharot means, and the be is, you know, a joining verb, the be, the in. Right, in kosharot. But for the Midrash is expanding it to separate it out to teach us something, which also seems to work well. So you could argue with some part of the verse. I apologize. I do not mean to say that anybody's marriage is remotely like this, but I'm just going to state this for the purposes of the of explaining the Midrash, that sometimes some people, after they have been living alone with their spouse for a very long time, perhaps because of COVID, may feel as if they are prisoners. And then when they are finally able to leave, perhaps, you know, because, you know, they can finally leave the house again, sometimes if it got really bad, it may have ended up in divorce. So that's why the prisoners in your prosperity is because you're finally out of that house. Again, not that anybody should know of such things, but perhaps that might be what the Midrash is trying to imply. That if, right, so that we mentioned that the point of a lot of times in marriage, you end up being together in the same home. So either this can be a blessing, right, where you are, which would lead to the shira, to all the singing. Alternatively, it can be a form of torture, and then you would end up being suffering the whole way through. So as far as the pasuk goes, the pasuk doesn't literally mean that, but the context of the pasuk does help to illustrate how it could how God's role in the formation of the home could play a role. Okay? So now we've got a little, don't worry, we have a little bit more marriage advice left. We're not, don't worry, we're not done. We don't just simply end it as, it's as if you're being chained in a house and being tortured by the circumstances. There's other more there's some more positive things God's doing as well. Okay, so now we have the statement of Rebbe Berechia. So who would like to read the English of Rebbe Berechia's statement, which is a little more complex than the previous one we had.
Rebbe Berechia said, like this, Rabbi Yossi Bar Tachlafta responded, the Holy One, blessed be He, sits and makes ladders, lowers for this and raises for that one, lowers this one and raises that one. As it says, God judges, this one laid low, this one raised. Tehillim, there are those who walk to their partner.
Wait,
those...
I have a pause for a second. All right, okay, so before we get to the next part over here of this part, let's analyze this part, because this part, I for one, am a little confused as to what's going on here, so let's try and unpack it a little bit. Okay, so what do we mean that God is lowering and raising in all these different types and forms, right? Right, there's a lot of, you could have simply said, you know, God raises and lowers. Why all this flowery language? Does this language sound familiar to anybody?
Does this language what?
Sound familiar? Of a lot of different synonyms of ways of raising and lowering.
Right, mashpil, what is it, you know?
Umiyarum.
No, he lowers some people and raises other people. I forgot how you say it in Hebrew.
Right. When do you say we say it, Grandma? What time of year does it remind us of?
Must be Rosh Hashanah.
Rosh Hashanah.
Right.
Right. At the end of a ton of Togaf, right? Miyarum, Mitshuva, Mitzvila, Tzedaka, right? Right.
Okay.
So this part, right? So that this language is part of that. So the other question would be, well, what on earth does that have to do with what we were talking about?
Well, if you're in a good marriage, then you're raised up. If you're in a bad one, you're lowered.
Exactly. Very good. I agree.
Okay.
So now let's check the context of the pasuk. Okay. So see here. Tehillim. I inhale that. Okay, so let's hope that this one. Okay, good. This pasuk lines up nice and clean. Okay, so we have it here. Okay, and this on the screen here. Hopefully, we can see it. If not, I'll make it a little bit larger. Okay, so ki Elokim shofet zayashpil v'zayarim. So, just want to point out the fact that in the English, for God it is who gives judgment. He brings down one man, he lifts up another. All right, so this phrase, right, which is then expanded, right, so it does bring up the language from Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And what's the important part here? What does it start with? Why it makes sense that we have it on the during the Yom Narayim, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, our days of judgment, is because what does the first half of the pasuk start with?
Which
Elohim shofet.
Right? For it is God who gives judgment. Excellent, right? So it makes a lot of sense why it sounds familiar from Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, because this is talking about judgment. And I'm saying that here, that part of the judgment, so for a lot of people, this might be a big issue that you're thinking about. On Yom Narayim, how will your year go? Will it be happy? Will it be sad? A lot of it might come down to how your marriage is going at a given point. So maybe think something, you know, nobody would be, it would definitely not be a good year if your year is decided that you'll end up, you know, ending up like those 1,000 slaves who ended up, you know, poking each other's eyes out and hobbling home. That would not be the judgment somebody's hoping for on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Right. So, all right, so now we see that the puzzle, so it makes a lot more sense now. All right, in the context, it works pretty well. So then there's one last parts of this midrash. We'll see whether or not this works out well or doesn't work out well. So who here was set up on their first date versus who set it up themselves?
I was set up.
Okay. So Grandma, you're going to read so you can read the first half. Who asked their partner out or has asked the partner out at some point? Would like to welcome the second half.
Where are we starting?
There are those.
There are those who walk. Just a second. I can wait. It's too small. Just a minute. Hold a second. There are those who walk to their partner. Their partner, and those whose partner walks to them. Yitzchak's partner came to him, as it says. Isaac went out to speak in the field, and Yaakov went to his partner, as it says. Yaakov went out from Beersheba. Beersheba. Okay.
Okay. So does that make sense? What we just read, that there are those who go out to their partners, and some of the partners go out to them, and the psukim that go along with it. Do those psukim make sense?
Yes.
So there's another version of this midrash that might change your mind.
Okay.
So here we go. So this is the immediately preceding midrash. So that was Breishit Rabbah. Samach Chet Dalid 68:4. Now we're gonna look at 68:3. Okay, so this is this is also the conclusion to the previous one. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now please read. Now please read this one.
I should. And Isaac went out walking. No, I read that
from here.
For in 6 days.
That's just now. See what I'm highlighting, Grandma. You see a little bit higher up.
Yeah. Okay. We just read that.
We did, but there's something different.
Okay, let's see. There are those who walk in their part with to their partner, and those whose partner walks to them. Yitzchak's partner came to him, as it says. He saw, and the camels were arriving, and Yaakov went to his partner, as it says. Yaakov went out from Beersheba.
Okay, so which one of those two versions makes more sense, right? So let's focus down on the pasuk that's quoted differently in each case, right? So there are times when the partner comes to you, and times when you go out to the partner,
right?
Okay, so now let's look. So for Yitzchak, so they're quoting the pasuk from 2 weeks ago. So. And Isaac went out walking in the field toward evening, and looking up, saw camels approaching. So which one of them makes him seem active? Which one makes him seem passive? Which half?
Wait a minute. Where's the other half?
Okay, so there's one here. So the first time, we quote the first half of the pasuk. And Isaac went out in the field toward evening. And then the quote stops.
Oh, and then it says, and looked up, he saw camels. And looking up, he saw camels.
That's the full pasuk. But the midrash one time quotes the first half, one time quotes the second half.
Okay.
So what's the difference between the first half and the second half?
Isaac, when
that one. The active and the second half
is
active.
Right, differentiating between active and passive. Right, when he's going out in the walking out in the field, that's just him being active. The second half of it, he's seeing the camels approaching, he's being passive. So depending on which one, it's either saying that, you know, so the midrash can either read, some are actively involved in seeking out the partner, some are passive. And then they give two examples of where you're actually being active or somewhat active, right? You know, Yitzchak, you know, he didn't do the whole journey, but at least, you know, he's credited with doing some effort of at least going to go pray for it. So according to the first midrash, right? So it seems that we're highlighting the fact that, and let me scroll back up for the previous one. Here now you can see them both on the screen, hopefully at the same time. right? There are two packages. There are those. So the first one, which says that Isaac went out to speak in the field, so that means that he's being, while he's not being quite as active in the story as Rivka is, he's still being active to a certain extent, right? He's still going, even though he's not, you know, going all the way to Haran to find Rivka, he's at least, you know, praying that it'll all work out, because I'll say that when he went out to speak in the field, that's when he was the first time that he established Mincha. Tfilah of Mincha, the afternoon prayer, which is, you know, during the busy time of the day. So that's when he established it. So that would work out quite well then. That he, so therefore, like, so, and then even if your, you know, spouse is going to come to you, so you still need to at least pray for it. So that's the first version of that part of the Midrash. But the second, the other version, right, of where Yitzchak's partner came to him, that seems to be more of simply saying that it's in God's hands, and that's that. So in order to understand why you would, you know, switch the pasuk as well, we might want to read the rest of the the previous midrash. So who here has seen Fiddler on the Roof?
Everybody.
Right? As Izzy raised his hand fastest though. So Izzy, could you please read for us the previous one all about the matchmaker, meaning God. Okay?
Rabbi Abahu opened, and Proverbs, property and riches are requested by fathers, but an efficient wife comes from the Lord. Rabbi Pinchas, in the name of Rabbi Abahu, we find in Torah, the prophets, and scriptures, Tanakh, that a person's perfect match is chosen by God. Where in the Torah do we find this? Genesis 24:50. Then Laban and Bethuel answered the matter was decreed by the Lord. Where in the prophets, Judges, his father and mother did not realize that this was the Lord's doing. In the scripture, Proverbs 19:14, but an efficient wife comes from the Lord. There are those who
brought right, and then we're back to
their partners and those who
right, and we're back to where we were before, right? So what would right? So now this, what's the whole point of this whole of this midrash as opposed to the other one? I mean, it's similar, but what's the very much the emphasis here?
The difference between riches and a quality wife. One is determined by Hashem, and one is determined by the fathers.
Right. Right. Riches seem to be from the father, but the good wife, you have no control over.
Right.
Right. So here, it's emphasizing that for a lot more than the other midrash, that there's a lot more in the hands of God. Right. No matter how hard you try, the only thing that'll guarantee it to work out is God's hand. So now let's check out these marriages and see were these really ones that worked out quite well or not. Okay. So the first one, okay, we're Lavan and Betuel. So this is pretty on topic. So that's the, so let's scroll down just to see the original pasuk. So this is from, all right, so this is from when Evan Avraham, right, when Avraham's servant is bringing back, is trying to get Rivka to come back and marry Yitzchak. And so after Avram's servant has gone through the whole explanation for how what happened the well and why it's clearly hand of God that Rivka should go, and then we see Laban and Betuel, two fairly wicked characters in general, are actually saying, "I guess it's from God." So that's
from Neo.
Right. So here we say that we see that example saying that it's from God. But we also see that that there was a lot of personal involvement, right? Individuals making sure that it happened as well. Right. So there's both. Right. So it's not purely God. God did it. You know, Evan Abraham definitely put in a lot of effort, as did Avram in sending him. And Rivka did as well in terms of her making sure she actually, you know, did what had to be done. Okay, so the next one we have is not necessarily the, okay, this is not remotely a good marriage. Never do this one. Okay, this next one is from Shimshon. Right, so after he has just taken his Philistine wife, this is the Philistine wife who will eventually, who as a result of having taken this wife, he will end up burning down all of the Philistine fields. Again, this is not Delilah, this is his first wife. Right, again, Shimshon is not one who chose wisely for his wives. Like, as in, wisely in terms of did it help the Jews win wars, yes, but in terms of was that a good match for him, the answer is, unless you enjoyed having attempted murder by your wife, not really. So then what does it say there? So his mother and his father did not realize that this was the Lord's doing. He was seeking a pretext against the Philistines, for the Philistines were ruling over Israel at the time. So what happened? We had, right, so this means that, right, Manoach and his wife, Shimshon's parents, were, when they saw that their son was basically intermarrying to marry a Plishti woman, was very upset. And they're like, oh no, what are we going to do? Our son's, you know, going off, you know, we lost him. It's all over. So from their perspective, it was. But like they thought, like, you know, we're losing our son. This is it. But in the end, it turns out that God, you know, man plans and God laughs. So God had a different plan in mind. He's like, true, this is looks really terrible, but I'm going to have this happening. This is going to happen. And at the end of the day, the Plishtim are going to suffer for it. Yes, you'll also end up suffering because you'll have to see this whole thing go down. But overall, hopefully it'll end up being better. So that's a marriage where basically everybody on the ground who's looking at it is like very, very confused about what's going on, but it's still in the hands of God. So as opposed to before, we have the very positive marriage of Rivka and Yitzhak. We have perhaps one of the worst marriages in all of Tanakh. Right? Yeah, the one that I think this wife is the one who ends up selling him out to the other party guests about his bet, right? Not a marriage you want to have. Yeah, definitely not at all. So then we get to the last plus I quoted. So the last plus I quoted is a little bit better and fits us and works a little bit better for us. So this is one which I'm sure we can appreciate a little bit more. It's saying, so there's two, so there's the different, as Izzy pointed out earlier, the differentiation between the riches and the marital life, right? Property and riches are bequeathed by fathers, but an efficient wife or a prudent wife, the question is, what does Misa Kelet mean? Comes from the Lord, right? Could also mean Seichel, meaning wise, right? Or having common sense. There's a lot of different ways to translate that word. So the point being is that property and riches are one thing, right? That's, you know, a lot of it comes down to, you know, were you born into money, not born into money? Would you get lucky? Did you not get lucky? Right? Did it work out? Did you try hard? Right? There's other factors involved there. But what's the truly thing that's truly divine? That's if you end up having a spouse who's wise, and works well with you. So, and that works quite well for being the puzzle for marriage, because sometimes you try your hardest and at the end of the day you have to thank God that it all worked out. So, and that's why we have at the end of the day, we see here with these two different partners, both of, right? And also interesting to note is that, right, so when we see here about Yitzchak versus Yaakov, so one of these is the conclusion of the journey. Oh, yes. Hi. Yes.
Hi. I didn't say your translation was a spouse who is
It yes. says wife. It doesn't say spouse.
Agreed. Wife. Agreed. Yes.
Oh, okay. That's different.
That was my little midrash. I apologize. Correct, mommy. It is referring to a wife. Unfortunately, we don't have any idioms talking about the having a throughout Proverbs. Some of them are nice proverbs like this one. Some of them are not ones that are so pleasant in their treatment of women. So one of them is better is the man who lives in the corner of a house, meaning like lives in the corner of a roof, than a man in a house with a bossy woman.
I didn't hear. What was the end of it? What?
Better is the man who lives on a corner of a roof than one who dwells in a large house with a bossy woman. That is also from, again, around the same area of Mishlei. That's not the one that we quoted.
Okay. All right.
Unfortunately, we don't have any quote. Mishlei does not really quote the positive husband imagery so much. So that's why I had to ad-lib a little bit. If somebody knows of a good one, the closest one is Phineas Kyle, where you have the husband is sitting with the other elders of the city, but that's more a testament to the wife than anything about the husband. So, yeah. So I'm not sure what to do about that one. But, okay, so we're getting a little distracted. Let's sum up, and then we'll, after there are any questions, anything you want to discuss, please do. So just again, I'll scroll up to the top. Okay, so again, so we started talking about the case of the matron, Rabbi Yosef ben Chalafta, about how the matron couldn't understand how God spends all his time, and all he's doing is being a matchmaker all day. But actually, she then tries it herself, winds up leading to severe bodily harm to most of the slaves she matchmakes with each other, because she forces them into it and none of them wanted it. And then we saw the true depth of how important it is in terms of God helping everybody get to the right spouse. How, you know, if it's good, how things are going well, you'll be singing from the rooftops, and how if things don't go well, you will be crying. You want to be in the one where it's positive, not negative. We discussed the statement of how God judging, raising you and lowering one could very much be simply about how your marriage will go, but that could definitely affect how the rest of somebody's year will go based on how that element of the lives works out. And then we spoke about the case of being active and passive, difference between Yitzchak, who's the far more passive role, as opposed to Yaakov, who is taking a far more active role in terms of seeking their spouse. And for more on the how active Yaakov is in terms of pursuing Rachel, so that will you'll see this kind of this parsha about the 14 years he works all just to marry Rachel. So. And we also went through the psukim that are quoted and how they all fit in or give a slightly different flavor to the midrash based on their own context. Okay. Anybody have any questions? Everybody needs to go. The main part is done. If you don't want to hold anybody too long. So if anybody has any questions, you know, we can discuss, you know, we can opine more about the marriage advice of the Chachamim, or we can discuss, or anything else that came up today. I'm happy to discuss more.
Okay.
Okay, well, if nobody has any questions, so I'm gonna stop the share and I'll stop the recording, and I will wish everybody a good night.
Good night.
Shout out, everybody.